This is the Graceful Atheist Podcast. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Graceful Atheist Podcast. My name is David, and I am trying to be the Graceful Atheist. Please consider rating and reviewing the podcast on podchaser.com or the Apple Podcast Store, and subscribe wherever you are listening. Special thanks to Mike T for editing today's episode. On to today's show. My guest today is Amy Rath. Amy is the host of the podcast Nun Life, about being one of the people who check none of the above on the religious category. Amy is one of those people who is doing something similar to what I am trying to do, and that is to encourage people to doing good in the world and be cover for those people who don't feel comfortable being a part of organized religion. Amy describes herself in one of her speaker bios as a shameless heathen who tries to remember that it's rewarding to be nice to others. I can't think of a better way of encapsulating secular grace than that. She also has said, "The concept of celebrating an ethical life absent organized religion has been on my mind for years." There's so much that she and I have in common. I so very strongly encourage you to check out the Nun Life podcast. I think you're going to find Amy is an amazing person, an amazing communicator, and will inspire you to do good. Here is my conversation with Amy Rath. Amy Rath, welcome to the Graceful Atheist podcast.
Thank you so much. Very excited to be here.
You are the podcast host of a podcast called Nun Life. That is N-O-N-E-S, for the people who click none of the above. And I just wanted to say how much I appreciate the podcast. It's super well produced, and it is doing something similar to this podcast in that it's trying to do good in the world and reach this particular group of people that maybe has been ignored in the past. Mm-hmm. I want to spend most of our time talking about your work, but before we get there, can you tell me a little bit about what part religion did or did not play in your growing up?
Absolutely. No, thank you. So I was raised Roman Catholic. Both of my parents are Irish, German, Roman Catholic. So it's almost as much of a cultural identity as it is a religion. Right. Was very unquestioningly involved in my youth, you know, really was all in, wanted to be good, went to parochial school for my entire upbringing. I used to joke that I didn't dress myself until I went to college because you just wore you just wore uniforms every single day. It really was, you know, very involved in the church, was all in. And then I won't go through the whole long story in this intro, but when I was kind of in my late teens, early 20s, was, you know, just kind of going through some struggles, you know, nothing terribly dramatic, but, you know, was starting to question and realized that I felt a lot better just not believing in anything. And it took a longer journey, you know, than that to get there. But I would, you know, my early 20s was kind of when I really just said, I'm not even going to fake it anymore. Like, I just don't. And I'm sorry, family, but I just don't. Didn't learn the term nun until, N-O-N-E, as you pointed out, until 2019. And it felt like, and this might sound ridiculous, although to your listeners, they'll probably know exactly what I'm saying. It felt like coming home. Like, finally, there's a name for what I am and what my beliefs are. So that was, you know, kind of the 10,000 foot overview.
Right, right. I have mentioned before that my father's side of the family was all Catholic, but I grew up with my mother's side of the family. So it was very distant and, you know, other in some ways. But I went to my grandparents and, you know, would occasionally go to mass or something like that. I always felt like a serious outsider. So what I'm saying is I am still just as ignorant of Catholicism as someone who has no contact whatsoever. But I hear you that, you know, it was kind of a cultural part of your life as well, beyond just the religious. And then I think you said something very interesting there, that you were unwilling to fake it. I think it's probably true that there are many people sitting in pews who are faking it.
I would imagine.
They're there for the community and for the, you know, the connection with people.
I would absolutely agree with you. And it is, you know, it's one of the older religions too. It's not as old as, you know, something like Judaism, but it is, you know, one of the older religions. And so I think you do have the phenomenon of, as far back as anyone remembers, a particular family has been Catholic, you know, and you can probably even count back to a grandparent's generation where somebody, quote unquote, married in who wasn't, and they're still seen as, oh, you know, like kind of new blood coming into the faith. So I think it is, right. I think there's a lot of people who just don't even think about being something other than Catholic. So right. I would agree with you. There's probably a lot of fakers or folks that just don't think about it for whatever reason.
Can I dig just a little bit about that transition for you? Did you just wake up one day and think, I really don't believe
that's
this?
It, I'm or, done.
Or was there, you know, was there some bits along the way where you're like, I can't accept this idea or that idea?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Definitely it was bits along the way. There was, and I can't, unfortunately, I think it's just so long ago that I don't really remember one specific catalyst. And I've absolutely talked to people or heard people on your show who can point to, you know, and this was the thing where it was the final straw. And I just don't remember having that particular moment. I think there's some things that if they had happened differently, I might still be Catholic, where, and these are some kind of common themes that I've heard. One, if there had been more teaching of the actual history of kind of who actually wrote the Bible, and it wasn't just one single scribe that wrote it directly from the Word of God, you know, like if they had been more respectful of the history, been more respectful of allowing you to ask questions, because I do feel like Catholicism is, when you ask one question, a lot of stuff kind of domino effect, you know, kind of starts falling. It was probably more social issues than anything. Like I went to a relatively large, not huge, but relatively large liberal arts college, and met people who thought differently than I did. And in my youth, or my, you know, childhood growing up, I would have been told that they were wrong and they were at best going to purgatory, but we're never going to make it into heaven, and kind of set themselves up for, you know, literally being damned, even though these were wonderful people that I was meeting. And I think just the exposure to different mindsets, you know, actually existed. They were good people. They were friends of mine. They were doing good in the world. And you didn't have to be Catholic in order to be good. But then if you take that back to folks who strongly believe, they're like, no, that's not true. You know, that's wrong. That's not the way things are. That kind of led me to eventually just saying, if that's what I'm supposed to believe, then I don't anymore. You know, right. if you're putting that black and white choice in front of me, then I've got to choose the other way.
Well, I think that's amazing. I think it's important. One of the reasons that I continue to use the moniker atheist is not so much that I really identify with that, but that it provides cover for everyone else. And that, you know, the more of us that just say, in whatever language we choose, I don't believe, is a solid way of describing it. And I think that's really, really valuable. So, you know, at some point you decide this is not for me, and you felt better just not believing in anything. And at some point you hear the term none and feel like, wow, that describes me. Take me through the trajectory of living a life as a nun, and then, and again, N-O-N-E.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny. It's a homonym, right? It's so funny.
Yeah, exactly. And then when you decided to actually be active in that community, to speak into that community.
No, thank you. Yep. So I feel like, and you are probably the same, you know, given the role that you play, that we probably think about religion a lot, you know, for not being particularly faithful. I spend a lot of time thinking about it. I'm always happy to have conversations about it, which is, it you know, sometimes perhaps more than faithful people do, but that's okay. Everybody makes their own. We all make our own choices. You don't have to. So a couple, I believe it was like mid 2018, when I really sort of started getting like very, very actively getting more involved, and when this brought me to learn the term nun, I happened to see online, the Atlantic, like the publication, the periodical, sure. The Atlantic, they had put something, I think, on their Facebook page or somewhere on their social media. They had like, we're trying to form a group that looks at world events specifically through the lens of religion. It might have even been 2017 that they put this out. If you're interested in joining, you know, fill out this application, and they were kind of putting a think tank together for their particular publication. And I dropped what I was doing and was like, I'm going to, however many hours it takes me to fill this thing out so that I sound coherent and and sort of am able to get involved with this, I'm going to. So, you know, rewrote it. And my lens was, if you are going to look at worldviews specifically from the point of religion, you have to have somebody that is not religious. Like you absolutely have to, in order for it to be valuable. And I'm not going to be in there to fight with people and convince them they're wrong. I want to make sure that voice is heard as well. Right. And, I was accepted, which stunned me, that they kind of let me in. But it was fantastic. It was an absolutely fantastic experience. The person that runs it, his name's Andrew Henry, and he has a YouTube channel, Religion for Breakfast, and does a lot of historical, like he, you know, talks about the actual history of the Bible, which was very, very interesting. Okay. But it started as kind of a smaller group of us and then grew toward a somewhat larger group. And I was never, you know, I don't have the credentials to get directly quoted in the Atlantic, but definitely was able to help lend a point of view to some articles, like the Rohingya genocide that was happening was something that we talked about extensively when when folks really started putting their names in the hats for the presidential election that just happened in 2020. We talked about, you know, Senator Harris and her having two different religious backgrounds and what that would bring to the field. So it was very, very interesting. And sorry, I feel like I'm talking for a long time here.
You can't talk too much. This is all about you, Amy.
Thank you. I think I joined that group saying, I don't know if I'm agnostic or an atheist, but I'm one of those. And I don't know, you know, which one I actually fall under. And then someone in that group talked about, actually, I think they just kind of pointed to a Pew Research article that had come out where they had the term nun. And that was like, oh, that's me. In the group being like, that's me. I finally have something that I can kind of put myself behind.
Isn't that like really kind of cathartic as well? Like there's something really powerful about identifying, you know, I know lots of people don't like labels, but when you find a label that fits, it's like, oh, this is great.
When you finally find one, and it's kind of the, like, those are my people, you know, like that's my community. And I'd felt kind of broken up until then because maybe humanist is what I am, you know, and I don't know why I don't fully call myself a humanist. I think I love that philosophy. You know, I there's always more I could learn about that, but that's probably the, if you had to be something that was not nothing, but actually something, would probably be humanism. But yeah, so that was where that term came from. The reason that I created a podcast was, I'm going to try to explain this in a way that doesn't make me sound too fluffy. A lot of folks look to religion for just general guidance. And I'm looking at kind of social issues, but also, you know, parenting. But like, why should we be nice to immigrants? Or why should you help sick people? Or those kind of things. And a lot of folks will just, they'll back up to, well, Jesus said, you know, or, well, this book said, or the Bible tells me, and then they'll come out with a quote. And my personal feeling is, if that's all you've got to base that on, then shut up. Like if you're just kind of backing up to the fact that some, you know, mythical creature told you that that's what you were supposed to do, you can argue either side of that, and people do. And I would hope that there is something more fundamentally human in you pushing you to make that decision. And I felt like there must be someone else out there saying that. And there definitely are, but I couldn't quite find what I was looking for. So I thought, well, if I'm looking for it, maybe other people are as well. So that's kind of what led me to start the podcast.
One of your early episodes might have been the first one. You were talking about being brave and going to these flash speaking events, these 5-minute, you know, lightning talks. You want to talk a little bit about what that experience was like and what you were trying to convey in those?
Yes, no, thank you. That it was, those are phenomenal. Yep. So there's a couple of them. So there's the Pachakacha, and then there's Ignite. Thank you. I'm like, Ignite talks, which are very, very similar. Ignite is just slightly shorter. So they are facilitated events, like you said, kind of flash talks. There's usually a group of speakers. You have so many slides. It's either 15 or 20, depending on which one that you're doing. You come up with a topic, and you come up with images for your slides, and then they auto advance every so many seconds, like usually 15 to 20 seconds. And you've got to get your story out, like whatever it is. So you've got to know that story. You've got to boil it down, and you've got to get your story out. And so I went to one, it was a Pachakacha, and it was shortly before the winter holidays. And my talk was basically, I'm going to go celebrate with my husband's family is also Catholic, and I'm going to go celebrate with family. And to them, it's a religious holiday. And to me, it's not. And it's going to feel kind of like I'm wearing a mask, and it's going to feel weird. And I just don't believe that way. And that was kind of, you know, the crux of it was sort of a going home for the holidays and just simply not believing. And that might have been it. I hadn't started the podcast yet, but that really did get the ball rolling, because I had three people who complete strangers to me, like people that I did not know. And I'm going to get a little emotional, actually say like, that really meant something to me, you know, just complete strangers. And this is a small audience. It's not like there were thousands of people there. You know, there were maybe 50 or, you know, there were less than 100 people there. But to have three out of that group who didn't know me, who weren't going to gain anything from saying something to me, say, like, you really profoundly helped me, you know, just kind of by having that identity, you know, kind of like showing like, oh, these are my people. That got me thinking like, wow, maybe I'm not the only one. Maybe there is room for kind of another voice in this field. And if it is helpful, then like you said, we just want to make the world a better place. We're just trying to do good. So yeah, no, thank you. Thanks for letting me tell that story.
Yeah. Wow. I am so happy that you are, you know, speaking into the world. I constantly, you know, I've got a few friends that are podcasters and things, and I always talk about how absurd it is to be competitive. There's so much room.
Oh my goodness.
So many people. There's so much room for diverse voices from different perspectives. And it's such an underserved area. Half of the battle is just discovery, is that just like you, people don't know what it means, you know, a nun. What is that?
What is that?
Before, you know, and find out that just exactly like your experience. Wow. There's a group of people that are my people and they understand me. And that feeling is just so amazing when you go through that discovery process. So anything
100%.
You're doing this, Amy, you're doing that, and people are hearing you and having that experience.
I think about podcasts like yours and podcasts didn't, like, I'm old. So they didn't even, I'm in my mid 40s. So, you know, they weren't a thing when I was going through my, you know, my kind of transition away, and just how much that would have helped a young person, you know, who's questioning, or a person of any age. I feel like often they're young people, but, you know, not always. It can happen at any point in life. But if something like your show had existed, where I, it's not just you. You have so many guests where people come in and they share their stories. It would have just been a lot less lonely. I think that you're probably saving people some mental anguish, you know, who are just kind of questioning, am I sinning? Am I just a bad person? You know, kind of what's going to happen to me? And just to have that community and that validation, I think is so valuable. So I'm equally grateful for the Graceful Atheist and all of the wonderful guests that you've had.
I do want to just praise my guests, including you, for just a second. I think it's really important that the diversity of the stories from men and women, gay and straight, from Catholic or Pentecostal or Calvinist, we're coming at it from multiple different directions, and there are commonalities along that road, but the stories can be wildly different. And the feedback that I get, the emails that I get, is someone will say, oh, your episode that just dropped, that person, they're telling my story. And I just love that, right? They may not have that reaction to my story, but they have that reaction to your story, right? And so that's what's so amazing about it. One of the topics that you are addressing is, like, one of the topics is optimism, and you had an episode about the positive effects of good news. And what I talk about a lot is this idea of secular grace. And one of the pitfalls I'm always trying to avoid is cloying platitudes.
Yes. Right.
And it's a challenge to talk about something positive, something that does good in the world without sounding like some guru. right. You know, I don't want to be Deepak Chopra, right? I want to actually say things that are, you know, real in the world and also do good in the world. Have you thought about that at all? How do you address that? And then maybe talk about a little bit the optimism and the good news, the positive effects that those things have.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's funny that you mentioned, like, the cloying platitudes, because an idea I keep having is shorter episodes. So something like, you know, 30, you know, like 5 or 10 minute episodes in 30 days or something like that around some very core focused short positive message, but I haven't been able to do it in such a way that I feel like it's substantial enough that it's worth doing, as opposed to just some, like, picture of a rainbow and, like, it'll get better, like, which is not a bad message, but there's hundreds of those, you know, open up Google and you've got, you know, hundreds of those images right there. But I do feel like there's a little bit more room from a kind of secular perspective there too. I just haven't quite tease that out yet. But yes, kind of on the theme of optimism and sharing positive news, and part of the ninja mission behind that too is not just positive news. And I tend to not be as upfront with this part about it and just kind of hope people figure it out, but positive news from a diversity of sources. Because if you want to find positive news about, you know, kind of a mainstream young urban Caucasian child with a lemonade stand, like, those are another, there's hundreds and hundreds of those stories. And I'm so grateful for anyone and everybody who's doing any kind of good in the world. But I feel like particularly, you know, in recent years with the past administration, there was a lot of othering and, you know, kind of shaming. And if you don't look like me, then you're automatically suspect, or if you have a different background or you come from a different place in the world. So trying to surface stories from a lot of different viewpoints, highlighting the fact that we can all be good. You know, like, there is, like, saviorism is, there's a definite line between trying to be a good person and trying to be a savior. And you don't want to feel like that other people are depending on you because they can't help themselves. You know, like we're all capable of doing wonderful, good things, and there might be different barriers. And that's a whole other conversation that allows some people to kind of more easily impact the world than others. But that's another kind of part of that is it's not just positive news, but it's from a variety of different resources because there is, you know, a psychological benefit to hearing good stories, and they don't just make you feel good. They can help you inspire you to kind of be more altruistic, do more good in the world, but then also hopefully look at folks who you might have viewed as an other, but instead view them as, oh, you're just as strong and capable and deserving of respect as I am.
Yeah. And then you also talked just about the personal benefits of that as well, that almost like the benefits of exercise, the benefits of positive news affect you psychologically in a good way.
They do affect you psychologically. And they sort of, I love that you said exercise, kind of just train you to look for positive things, you know. And I'm not trying to say that this is going to solve mental problems or, you know, anything like that. At some level, it is just kind of a surface mind change, but it absolutely, there are positive psychological benefits as well if you sort of train yourself to develop that habit.
One of the things I appreciate about you is that you aren't getting out over the evidence. You're saying, hey, this is a positive thing, but you aren't saying it's a miracle cure. It's
I try very hard. I try very hard. Yes.
But I appreciate that. I can tell that you're doing that. And I think that's what we need out there is, like, you know, we have lots of people that are saying, you know, they're overstating things, and then people are disappointed by the reality. And there are good things in the world, and they do have good benefits. And we can talk about those correctly, accurately, and still benefit from them. I want to talk a little bit about secularization. So you mentioned the Pew Research, and we know that the people who mark none of the above are kind of the fastest growing, quote unquote, religious group in the United States. And, you know, we've watched something like that happened in Europe over the 20th century. I think I have the concern sometimes that the secular community hasn't organized well yet to collectively do good, to collectively seek meaning. And like there was a Christian apologist talking about how many hospitals are built with secular humanists' names on them. And it's like, yeah, that's kind of a good point.
It's not a bad point. Right.
Yeah. You know, I think that there are, don't get me wrong, but my point is there's some validity to that criticism. How do you think of the positive effects of secularization, and what are we losing in that process? What are nuns missing by not being part of a religious community?
Right. And I mean, community is a sense of community, right, is kind of a big deal. The impact that you can have through organization, you know, for I'll say social change again, but, you know, a lot of different ways. You know, they talk about how evangelicals vote as a block, you know. Nuns probably all more or less vote similarly, but you don't kind of have that power, you know, behind it. I can only think of one really secular organization that is along the lines of what you're talking about, and that's Foundation Beyond Belief. There definitely can be, I feel like there's room for more, you know, again, not that you want to create competition, but I can only think of one off the top of my head. Whereas if you ask me to name religious ones, I could probably come up with five off the top of my head. So I think that we're losing the ability to, as a group, have more of an impact on the world. And I think that we also, I'm trying to think of how to phrase this. I don't know how you feel, but sometimes I do still today feel uncomfortable kind of sharing that I'm not a believer, right? I think folks just assume that you believe in something, particularly in, you know, in America and other parts of the world, it might be a little bit different, but I think they assume that you have some beliefs. And when they find out that you're, you know, a heathen, there's a little bit of this wall that kind of goes up. And I think just simply normalizing a different belief system or lack of belief system or, I think we lose that as well. Like, I think we sort of can make it better for the next person that comes along, like you said a few minutes ago, by just being a little bit louder. And you're louder together than you are louder individually as well.
Yeah. I have to quote you just because you used the word heathen. Your speaker biography said, Amy is a shameless heathen who tries to remember that it's rewarding to be nice to others. That is just so beautifully said. I love that. That's fantastic.
Thank you. I was proud of that. It took me a little while. My mom was a writer. She was not a published author. She was kind of a writer in her spare time, but she really drilled a love of words into me. So there's a lot of times where I don't stop until I'm done, which makes podcasting a little weird because I try to record live, but I'll write a script out like very thoroughly before doing my episodes because I want to make sure I get the words right. So thank you. I was particularly proud of that. Awesome. Shameless heathen. We should all be shameless, right?
Yeah,
just exactly. As long as you're not hurting others, just no shame.
And then one of your more recent episodes, you talked about cults. So I want to explore just a couple of areas for this. One is you also mentioned this idea of hedonic adaptation, mm-hmm. in the sense that human beings, we adapt to nice things and we don't get the same pleasure or joy from them after a period of time. And then I think one concern for me is that the nuns, particularly nuns who are unlike you and I, don't have kind of a religious education, aren't aware of religious, might be susceptible to the cult mentality, in that cults typically come along and say, hey, we love you. Come be a part of the love bomb concept, right?
Yes.
They come and they grab you, and you know, they don't tell you, as I think you said, the crazy things first.
Right.
They're like, come to our potluck. A concern that I have is just that education piece of knowing what cults are about. And also this, back to the hedonic adaptation, mm-hmm. recognizing that human beings, we do get to kind of a malaise, kind of an ennui. We have these fancy words for them, but you know, like, we are unsatisfied even when things are good. That's why even very, very wealthy people can be terribly unsatisfied.
You were right.
So how do you think about that as far as your message of communicating to that target audience, the nuns?
That is great. No, that is an absolutely fantastic question. And I can't remember now if it was in the cult episode or if it was in the one that I did before that, where I talked about propaganda and sort of one of the best ways to sort of get people on your side is to create an enemy, like whether one exists or not. And that helps also fight against, I love that you mentioned the hedonic adaptation. It fights against that as well, because you can't get too comfortable. You can't get too happy with the way things are if there's that enemy out there. But then that can definitely spiral into, you know, cult-like territory or at least othering, where you shouldn't necessarily be doing that. So is your question more around kind of some folks that just kind of always were nuns, and like you said, don't have their religious background, don't quite realize how good they have it? Is that kind of what we're getting toward?
Yeah, I guess a concern of mine. So this is not my, like, this is not new to me. Like,
right.
When I, if you've listened to the podcast, you've heard me talk about Jennifer Michael Hecht's book, Doubt, A History. And so the Greeks were talking about this, right? If we take religion away, what happens to society? Does it come crashing down? And so, how do we inoculate people who are leaning towards secularism, don't have a particularly defined sense of religion one way or the other, from the predatory nature of cult practice?
That is a fantastic question. I don't know that I have the answer to that. I think that that is definitely a big, big question. You're getting so many wheels turning for me. I'm excited to think about this.
Did you fix world hunger too?
Right. No, and I haven't read that book yet. I have heard of that book, but that is one that I have not gotten to yet. But I think that for one, aspect, the world is never going to stop giving us problems, you know, like no matter how psychologically or mentally healthy we are or accepting we are, we're not going to cure every disease. We're not going to fix economic disparity, although we should. Like we're not likely to. Weather, you know, will continue to throw hurricanes and, you know, fires and stuff like that at us. So I think, you know, for our mortal lives, we're always going to have some kind of struggle. I think that having a sense of, I believe, it's hard for me to put this into words because I did say a few minutes ago, and I believe, like, I am not a savior, but right. I should help people. To just talk about my father, you know, he always says, I just want to leave the world a little bit better than how I found it. You know, even if it's just a tiny bit better, and to just feel like every day you should be doing something to try to accomplish that. Maybe some days it'll be bigger than others. Maybe some days it'll just be literally holding the door open for somebody because you don't know the impact that's going to have on them. So I think as long as there's the mindset, first, again, the world is kind of perfectly always going to put problems in front of us, no matter who we are or how much money we have, to your point, and that we just have that sense of kind of social responsibility. Like we're literally all in this together. I know that's a platitude, but literally we are all here. There is nowhere else to go. We're all here. I don't really have a good reason other than, you know, what philosophers and stuff and said around why we should help each other. I think that the fact that there are so many religious people kind of speaks to the fact that we all kind of believe on some level that we should, you know, that, that, to me, religion is just, if you follow these steps, then life gets better. That's kind of just what it boils down to. There's no reason you can't carry that over into the secular world. And there will be probably never a point where we don't have to just keep improving in one way or the other, be it to help people that have, you know, encountered some devastation of some form or another, or even are just mentally struggling, you know, maybe with job loss or who knows what.
I think we'll segue to humanism for a second, because I think you just beautifully articulated humanism. And so I find it fascinating that that is something that, you know, you haven't quite delved into yet. And let me jump the gun and try to give you a reason why. I think we have a terrible PR problem for humanism. And one of the issues is that it, you know, it elicits the image of an Oxford professor in a tweed jacket in, you know, in his ivory tower.
It kind of does, yeah. Right? And it's not, isn't like Norway the country with the most, with the biggest humanist population? Isn't it over in Scandinavia somewhere? I don't even know why we think Oxford. Sorry to cut you off.
So I think, you know, people either have never even heard the word or they have really negative connotations for it. But what you've just articulated, I think, captures it, of just trying to come together and do good in the world to make the world a little bit better in the similar way that religion does provide that community where we encourage one another. And I can just tell you, just from listening to your podcast and this conversation, I've been inspired. I'm thinking I need to go do one of your lightning talk concepts.
You know, you should. Everybody should. They are so fun. Please do it, please. And then send me the video because I want to see it.
So first I'd like to hear, you know, what is your conception of humanism? And then maybe we can get into some more questions about that.
No. Yeah, absolutely. And I think I'm going to answer the question in a slightly roundabout way. I think the only thing that honestly keeps me from just saying, you know what, I'm a humanist. Like I love humanism, and I do, is just that I don't, maybe I'm just wishy-washy, but to kind of commit to anything, I sort of feel like, oh, but maybe I wouldn't be a good humanist. You know, maybe at someday I would kind of say something like, you know, I'm going to pray, you know, something like I might slip in some way and say, yeah, does part of me hope there's an afterlife? I don't know, hope, but maybe I don't think so, but I'm not going to pretend to know everything. And I think that's the only thing that keeps me from ascribing to any particular belief system is just that little bit of like, I don't no. And maybe there is something after I die. Probably not. I'm not living my life, you know, thinking that that's going to happen. But I think that's the only barrier that I have.
Okay. Yeah. I want to just explicitly state for listeners, you know, I think agnosticism, being a nun, is a perfectly valid position to take. And you know, not wanting to be pigeonholed is entirely valid. So I completely get that and understand it. So
no, but I there's some aspects of humanism. Like, I wish I'd known when I was getting married and when my daughter was born some more of the ceremonial aspects, like a naming event and stuff. I'm like, oh, that would have helped. Because when I didn't baptize my oldest, that caused, you know, some friction within my family. There's like, what? And I'm sure there are people who, you know, grandparents that probably pray every day that my child not go to hell should something terrible happen, because as a parent, I haven't baptized her. I feel like had I had a ceremony, even if it's, you know, ceremony in air quotes sort of thing, but like a naming event or something like that, that would have kind of bridged that gap a little bit for some people. So there's definitely, that is something that I think I miss more than others, is just having some ceremonial. That'll actually be kind of one of my very next topics, I think, that I'm going to cover, is the importance of ritual. But I sort of jumped in. Yes, I would love to hear more about kind of your the benefits that you see from humanism, or just anything that you want to share there, because I know you've thought much more about it than I have.
Well, I don't know if that's true. Two more book recommendations really quick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Particularly if you're about to do an episode on ritual. Is Sasha Sagan's For Small Creatures Such as We.
Yes. I listened to your podcast twice and I've got to get the book now. Yep.
So that one's great. And then Catherine Osmond, Grace Without God. Both of them kind of make the argument that humans need ritual. They don't have to be.
Okay.
They don't have to be supernatural, but just this idea of marking points in time, like your child being born or your child.
Milestones.
Milestones. And how valuable that is as a community and for us as a human beings to just mark those moments of life events.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So to maybe jump off of some of the things that you had said, I think an interesting question you kind of posed in the middle of all that was, how do you make the argument that we ought to do good? This is a really challenging question. And sometimes we hear from the religious people, they will say, well, humanism borrows everything from Christianity, to which my immediate response is, so?
if we're
doing good in the world, we're doing, you know, we love people and we want to impact people's lives in a positive way. Shouldn't we all agree that that's a good thing, regardless of what our justifications for doing so are?
Why are we claiming rights over this? Yeah. We don't need to own this. Oh my goodness.
I do not care what philosophical, ethical, religious background you come from. If you are feeding the homeless and you know, reaching out to immigrants and, you know, trying to bring justice in the world, I'm behind you. You're on my team.
Yes.
So I think one of the benefits of humanism is that it is that big tent. I think that people who hope for a life after death are within those bounds, right? I think one of the benefits of it is that there isn't a strong dogma. You don't get kicked out for having contrary ideas, right? Having said all that, I also am not a humanism apologist. I'm not saying you have to say you're a humanist. Again, I don't care. I'm excited that you are impassioned to do good in the world. And that's all I care about, right? I don't care what you call yourself. For me, one of the things I have tried to do and to try to encapsulate it in those good words, like you say, is bring humanity to humanism, or a humanism that is blood, sweat, and tears, and remove it from the philosophical ivory towers and talk about how do we actually live this out? How do we live this as full human beings with our emotion, with our intuition, not just the rationality, the pure rationality, that kind of thing. So that's kind of what I'm trying to capture in this idea of secular grace. I'm also trying to capture the benefit of intentionally being vulnerable with one another and intentionally being kind and gracious when someone is vulnerable with us and the catharsis that that brings about.
Yeah.
And that part of what we've been describing here of recognizing, oh, these are my people, whether you identify with the term none or atheist or agnostic or humanist, recognizing that feels so wonderful. And that experience is so valuable. And again, the diversity of stories, allowing people to hear other people's stories and find the people that you recognize yourself in, is just so valuable. So that's kind of high level why I like the term humanism. But
yes,
if you had any specific questions, let's hear them.
I don't have anything more specific. That was actually really wonderful just to kind of hear you talk about it and describe it. I love the term, you know, big tent. It might even be like just the religious background in me having that fear of like, oh, if I say the wrong thing, I'm going to get judged. So to just kind of hear like, maybe on an individual basis, somebody might giggle. But if, you know, I was to say like, yeah, I'm going to just pray that this happens, not even meaning I probably wouldn't even literally pray. I've just said that so many times throughout my life that that's what you're supposed to, you know, oh, I'll say some prayers for, you know, I probably won't actually pray. I'll probably just think good thoughts, but knowing that that won't get you kicked out of the humanism tent it's just good reassurance. And that's just good to know. That's just really good to know. I love that you said vulnerability, because I would imagine that is probably a struggle, particularly for folks that have deconverted, to be vulnerable again, you know, and to kind of open yourself up to, it doesn't mean that you need to let somebody have dominion over you or tell you exactly what to do. Like the vulnerability is very different than the kind of supplication that other more nefarious leaders might ask of you. We are vulnerable. Pretending that you're not is wrong. And I will be somebody who all day long, I don't need help. I can do it by myself. I don't need, you know, it's very difficult for me to be vulnerable, even to the point where sometimes when I'm doing the podcast, it's like, gosh, I hope that this isn't just an exercise in ego. But I feel like I have those doubts, but I've had enough people, or I'll see even with other podcasts, just the comments for people like, oh, thank you. Oh, this is helpful. Or YouTube channels or writing or, you know, whatever it is, just the folks that are like, thank you. This is helpful. I appreciate it. And it's like, okay, as long as you feel like you are helping somebody who's vulnerable, often by being vulnerable, you know, yourself, it's worthwhile.
Yeah. Some of the context for me of this idea is really 12 steps. And I know there's a lot of spirituality in there, but my mom had a drug and alcohol addiction that was very severe. But my early spirituality was influenced by 12 steps. And what I saw, kind of be in the back of the room listening, was just how these people would be confessing these just horrible, horrible things. But the group of people reflecting love back at them was this incredible thing to witness.
It's amazing.
And that's kind of what I'm trying to capture. And it's really, really hard not to fall into cloying platitudes, right? When you're describing this. But I know that for me, you know, the times that I am really open with my best friend, with my wife, with, you know, a trusted advisor or something like that. And I do want to just say here that that word intentional is important. You get to choose who you are vulnerable with, unlike the religious context.
100%.
Yeah. There's no accountability group you have to be a part of. But with your best friend, you should be able to be your authentic self. And that experience is really worthwhile and, you know, can have transformative effects on you as a human being.
Absolutely. No, you are so right.
One last thing that I didn't mention earlier, we were talking about the justification for doing good in the world. My argument is that religion is taking an axiom of the existence of God and God giving human beings worth. So they take that as a given and they live in the world that way. And I like to just point out, I'm just asserting that humans have value, that human beings, are you human? You've got value. You have, you deserve respect. You deserve dignity. You deserve kindness. You deserve all of the human rights. So I'm just skipping the middleman and saying, and then
I love it. Yes.
So that is my axiom. And then what implications of that fall out, right? And what I like about this is, unlike when I was a Christian, I can embrace the trans community, the LGBT community. It absolutely destroys racism, because if you're a human being, that's it.
The end of story. Exactly.
Yeah, you get all the privileges therein. There's no way I can say, you know, this person is more worthy than this person.
Yes.
We are all human beings. So that is part of what I like about the idea of humanism as well, is that we just take it as a given that human beings have value, and we try to treat one another as if that were true.
No, 100%. Absolutely agree. There is a few years ago, I mean, probably going back on about 10 years ago now, I saw some, I can't remember if it was a billboard or a commercial or something, where it was specifically kind of targeting fallen. I don't like that term, but fallen away Catholics. And it was kind of like, come back to the church.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm just going to look at it. There was like a webpage, right? And it was, I'm just going to look at this and just see, you know, I really don't want to go back to the church, but I just want to see what on earth there. And I'm like, and good for you, church, recognizing that you need to sort of rebrand yourself a little bit, right? Or do something to reach out. Cause, you know, it's a very, it doesn't change. it is not prone to change. And something that, oh my God, just made me really lose respect. And I mean this in a very general term, like not for individual people or anything like that, but for this effort that they were putting out. I'm in my mid 40s, so I'm old enough that when I was, you know, up until college, divorce was right up there with murdering someone, practically speaking, you know, like just absolutely, absolutely not, you know, absolutely not. And this site that I went to, which I think it was Come Back to Catholicism, or I don't know, I don't remember the exact name. I think they just realized that society had changed, but the dogma hadn't. So essentially, it's now much easier to get an annulment. And divorce is just kind of like an accidental step you need to take on your way to an annulment, which is saying the marriage never happened. So that was now okay. Like you could now get divorced and be a completely fine Catholic as long as that annulment was coming, because they were adapting to the times.
Right.
But if you were homosexual or anything like that, you know, you still might as well have killed somebody like that. And that it really spoke to me of, oh, you know, enough people have done something that they decided to change, but they're still othering, if not more so othering, you know, other human beings, to your point. And no, even if I'd thought for a fleeting second that I might go back, I'm absolutely not. You're not being as respectful as you should be. So
yeah.
I just wanted to throw that in there, because you're right. We're human. Kind of as soon as you're here, you should get the same respect and privileges. Absolutely agree.
Right. I actually do encourage people to do what you've just done there, right? Go explore what the current arguments are for bringing you back.
Right.
I imagine that if your experience is like mine, that you will find that it is not compelling. But unlike when we were religious and it was kind of taboo to go look at sources that disagreed with your religious tradition, you are absolutely free to go explore any ideas anywhere and determine whether you find them true or compelling or not. And what an experience that I find often is, there's some tiny part of me that wants some of the apologetic arguments to be sound. And so I'm constantly going and reading, and my experience is like, maybe this one will have something important to say. And it's like, oh no. And I'm legitimately disappointed that it's a bad argument.
I love it. No, that's so true, because we could probably have an apologetics argument right now just because we know the way it's going to go, right? Exactly. A couple sentences in, you know exactly the way that it's going to go. And it's kind of hard to keep your passion up at that point.
Like, exactly.
Not that I want to fight people I know people who are religious who are truly respectful people and it's a place of solace for them. But if you're trying to convert me or trying to tell me that I'm wrong, you should come at me with something more than, God is disappointed or, right. Just twisted mythology that is like, are you listening to yourself right now? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
I want to make sure that we've hit all the topics that you wanted to touch. Is there anything I haven't asked you or any questions that you had that we want to get to?
So I would love to hear, and this is probably, I'm sorry, like in some of your podcasts, I haven't listened to all of them yet, but I would love to hear, how has it been kind of living your life without that religious framework around it? Like one of the first times I encountered a real difficulty was when I was a new parent. Yeah. And I realized what a great behavioral tool religion was, where all you had to do was say, like, you're making God cry.
Yeah.
Stop hitting your sister. It was just, but to not have that in your backpack was kind of a sudden, and we've adapted. I mean, there's better ways of doing that. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to make too much fun here, but that is kind of a place where I'm always sort of looking for guidance is that, when you are going to construct a moral, ethical life where you are kind of dedicated to doing the right thing. And then if you're a parent, teaching other people how to do the right thing. Would just love to hear any stories or resources or anything that you would like to share on that topic. Cause I think that's an area where definitely there's way more that could be said.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is kind of an impossible question like I posed to you earlier, but in the spirit of being vulnerable, really the story that leaps to mind is my mom passed away about 8 months after my deconversion.
Yeah. Oh goodness. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, that's okay. I didn't, you don't have to feel bad at all. But the full weight of there was no euphemism, story, comfort, she was gone. Mm-hmm. And with several years hindsight now, I feel like I was able to grieve her in a way that I might not have been able to if I kept thinking I would get to see her again.
Okay.
But, that first year or two was definitely hard without the comforting story.
Yes.
And I tell the story of about a year after her death, I took her ashes to a favorite beach of hers. It was a long road trip for me. I did it by myself. And I just gave myself permission to talk out loud. Mm-hmm. I wasn't necessarily praying. I wasn't necessarily talking to someone who I believed to be my mom, but I was talking out loud to myself, gave myself permission and just cried and talked as if my mom could hear me and grieved. I just grieved. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying this is the right way to do it. I'm just saying this was my experience. And I think everyone will go through this, that it may not be the loss of a parent, but the first major life event, a financial problem, a relationship problem, loss of a loved one, that's going to be really hard. And I wish I had comforting words to say, this is how you make it better. And you might even find yourself defaulting to prayer, right? Don't, mm-hmm. and don't beat yourself up about that either, right? Like that's years, decades of reinforcement, right? But, now many years on, I am really open with my immediate family. The joke, talk about saying, oh, I'll pray about that or something, just whatever those automatics are. I'll often say bless you to my kids and my wife. And I've made it a joke. Like if they sneeze twice, I'll be like, okay, bless you. And then the third time I'll be like, I'm not going to bless you three times. That's just too much. But I'm really explicit with them about, you know, like, this is where I'm coming from. You know, I see it this way from a naturalistic point of view, but I support you and I love you. And you know, whatever decision that you make, I'm going to try to support you as much as possible. I think the feedback I'm getting a lot of late, really over the last year and a half, is that this idea of secular parenting, particularly after having been religious, is very, very challenging, and trying to have some more episodes around that as well. And then the last thing I'll just say is, you know, in my conversation with Sasha Sagan, I don't know how to capture this thing that I think Sasha has, I think Catherine Osmond has, I think that I have in some small degree. I think people like yourself, I think people like Bart Campolo have it, but there is a joie de vivre, a joy about life, a hopeful optimism, but a realistic one. And if I knew how to give that away, this is the entire project of this podcast. Trying to give that away. But I'm doing everything that I know how to do that. And I know that it's occasionally successful, but I wish I could give it away more. I wish people could experience what it feels like to see the world as it is to the best of your ability, to be willing to be wrong. If I could summarize all of the deconversion process in two words, it's error correction. literally, right? It is being, I'm hoping to get, I'm going to blank on her name now, but the woman who has just recently done a TED talk, she's written the book called Scout Mindset. And it's all about wanting to see the world as it is and being willing to be wrong, and correct yourself. And that attitude alone moves one forward in the world. First of all, you can let go of your ego because you're going to be wrong a lot. instills some very natural humility, and it gives you some openness to talk to people with whom you really disagree with, right? I have many, many believers in my life, and I have no problem talking with them. And they occasionally say outlandish things, and I don't feel the need to correct them.
Right. Right. Yes.
I can just be in a conversation with them, and I know they've just said something crazy.
Right.
But I love them, and what I want is for them to feel loved and heard more than corrected.
Yes.
I can let go of being right for the relationship.
And, oh, absolutely.
And so it's little things like that, right? Like you just, you know, I think when you feel like a whole human being, that you are having your spiritual quote unquote needs met, then you can begin to give back to people. You can be the bigger person when somebody's, you know, telling you that you have no basis for morality.
Right, exactly. What's to keep you from just killing people? I'm just not going to do that. What's to start me killing people? Exactly. Why would I? Yeah. It seems like a lot of effort, you know, if not. Yeah, it's a joke. It's a sick joke. I love it. I love all of that. I looked up that book because I hadn't heard of it. So yeah. Julia Galef?
Galef, yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yes. And okay. She is also the podcast host of Rationally Speaking, which is also excellent. Very, very good. So I feel like I've slipped into youth pastor mode, which I am apt to do. Did that answer your question?
I love it. I love everything that you said. And I like the focus on kind of big life events, and particularly ones that will be challenging. And I agree. Like I wish that there was I love your term secular grace. I just love it. I want more of that. Like I want more of that in the world. I want more people talking about that. Cause there's probably not one way to approach it. Like you said, there's no real like right or wrong way to approach it, but I would love more ideas on how we move past those things without like go to church, you know, which works for some people, but it doesn't work for many, many, many people. Right. And I feel like a lot of us are probably out there reinventing the wheel while we're going through something challenging. And like you said, you just try to put out there, like, I'm trying to come up with some tools that maybe will help somebody else, or at least, you know, lighten the mental and, you know, emotional burden a little bit, if you can. yeah, kind of, and the having lived through it, right? I think there's probably an aspect to you that's like, I went through it. I want to help the next person. So I'm going to do my best, you know, to do that.
Amy, this has been an amazing conversation. Your podcast is Nonelife. That is one word, N-O-N-E-L-I-F-E. People can search for it that way. But how else can they reach you?
Yeah. So there's my email is, I think it's hello. So hello and then .nonelife@gmail.com. I have a website with the podcast. You can get to it on Apple Podcasts and all that good stuff. But there's also a page, which is just nonelife, like you said, all one word .org. Okay. And there's links to contact me through there. So absolutely love to hear from people. And definitely, I'm also on Facebook, which is, it's just Nonelife on Facebook. And that's probably the place where people tend to go out of their way to let me know that I'm a bad person. So you're welcome to also, you know, maybe tell me that I'm not a bad person. That's fine. You know, if you want to reserve that of all areas, I'm not really on Twitter because, you know, because I've seen what Twitter does, but I don't know if you get that ever through your, but the like, I'll keep my Christianity. Thank you. Why did you feel targeted? Like, yes. what about our message of like, be good, be nice to people, be optimistic, share good news, help one another, made you feel like we were targeting you in some way?
It is amazing, the defensiveness. Yeah. One of the messages that I have for atheists is, it's just not your job to respond to every troll on the internet.
No, that is true. That is, yeah.
People yep. are wrong on the internet. That is just a thing you should begin to accept in your life. and for your own mental health, let it go.
Just let it go. Let it go. That person could have done anything with their time and they did that. Don't you make the same mistake. Let it go. Let it go. You can see I'm still kind of like, you know, put off by this, but that's okay. Like you said, let it go. That's like I said, life will always give you problems. So just, you know, yes. deal with the big ones and let the little ones go.
Yeah.
I am so happy that I got to talk to you. I've learned so much. I truly appreciate it. Thank you for all of the work that you are doing. Just thank you so very much. I really, really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Final thoughts on the episode. Well, as you can see, Amy is an incredibly inspiring person. I have been inspired by listening to her podcast, Nonelife. We will definitely have links in the show notes for that for you to find her podcast. I highly recommend that you go and check that out. I really, really respect the position of calling oneself a nun. You don't have to say you're an atheist. You do not have to say you're a humanist. You can say, I don't know yet, or I just don't feel like I fit in any category. And I think that is a really respectable position to be in. I respect Amy's expression of what it means to be a nun. And as well, you could definitely hear in our conversation how much we have in common of trying to figure out how to live an ethical life ourselves, as well as to encourage others and to be that cover for people who don't feel like they fit in any particular category. I call it giving cover for doubters. And I think Amy is doing basically the same thing. Apologies for a lot of praise back and forth, but I think you could hear the mutual respect there. Amy is incredibly inspiring. And as I said in the conversation, I'm going to look into some of the lightning talk ideas. I will have links in the show notes for Amy's Pachakacha presentation, and I encourage you to check that out as well. I want to thank Amy for being on the podcast and for sharing her wisdom, sharing her joie de vivre, her joy of life, her desire to be ethical in the world, and all of the inspiration that she brings. Thank you, Amy. The Secular Grace thought of the week is to echo Amy, and that is to be bold. One of the things that is so inspiring about Amy's work is she's putting herself out there. And so I encourage you to be bold, to find a place for your voice to make a difference. Now, this doesn't mean that you have to be a podcast host or speak in front of an audience or be aggressive on social media. What I'm saying is, what are your gifts? How did you use your gifts when you were in the church? Find a way to use those same gifts in the secular world. How can you make the world a better place? And you can do it. As always, I've got some amazing episodes coming up. I have an episode with Travis from the Measure of Faith blog. What's interesting about Travis is he has documented the change over time of where his position is. So from a Christian to semi-agnosticism to a little bit more doubt. And he also has just an incredibly powerful story about the loss of his father and the grief without those comforting beliefs. So look forward to that. I also have an amazing conversation with Chris Hyland. Chris is a blogger and an early member of the Clergy Project. Chris is another one of those people that is just doing what I aspire to do, and I aspire to be like Chris. He has also worked with Linda LaScola on the Rational Doubt blog. Many of his blog posts have been posted there. Look forward to that. That was a great conversation. That is coming up soon. Until then, my name is David, and I am trying to be the graceful atheist. Join me and be graceful human beings. Time for the footnotes. The beat is called Waves from Makai Beats. Links will be in the show notes. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can promote it on your social media. You can subscribe to it in your favorite podcast application. And you can rate and review it on podchaser.com. You can also support the podcast by clicking on the affiliate links for books on gracefulatheist.com. If you have podcast production experience and you would like to participate with the podcast, please get in touch with me. Have you gone through a faith transition and do you need to tell your story? Reach out. If you are a creator or work in the deconstruction, deconversion, or secular humanism spaces and would like to be on the podcast, just ask. If you'd like to financially support the podcast, there's links in the show notes. To find me, you can Google Graceful Atheist. You can Google deconversion. You can Google secular grace. You can send me an email, gracefulatheist@gmail.com, or you can check out the website, gracefulatheist.com. My name is David, and I am trying to be the graceful atheist. Join me and be graceful human beings. This has been the Graceful Atheist Podcast.